Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you are getting ready for a great weekend. Other than the fight and eating eggs, DeMarco, you got plans this weekend?
Just, you know, Rams Park, watching football, getting ready, acting as if we're going to have a season.
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth. It depends on the day. It depends, you know, part of it is it depends on how much of the news I've watched on any given day. I find that I'm more optimistic the less I watch the news. But I'm optimistic about the NFL. Hearing what you've told me about what you saw yesterday when you went to the facility and the protocols in place and they're doing everything they can, I don't know if we'll get to the end of the line, but I truly believe we will get to the start. And once you start something like that, it's usually pretty hard to stop.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on if you have more and more boneheads like that guy in Seattle.
Oh, we'll get to him.
That tries to, sneak somebody up to the room and puts everybody at risk. I mean, as long as you don't have a mass outbreak at one position or you start losing some key players, I think you'll have a chance to continue on, keep playing. But, you know, like you said, every day, every step we take is something new. Never been here before. This is unprecedented, but I keep going back to what Anthony Lynn said, the L.A. Chargers head coach. One out of 32 teams is going to get this right. So at least you know they're going to start, but don't be caught unprepared if they keep going. Like if you think they're going to end this thing and you're unprepared and then you're in week 15 and you don't have a plan, well, that's your fault.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the guy from Seattle, and I think that this is a good place to talk about him. A rookie cornerback named Kima Silverlin said, or he got caught trying to sneak a girl into the facility, and he had her dressed up in team gear, trying to sneak her in as a player or whatever. But look. Let's go back about a year or so ago or whenever pre-pandemic, whenever we were just kind of living our normal lives prior to this. If you wanted to stay up all night and be crazy, that was going to affect you. And maybe you'd perform poorly and maybe that might affect the team to a certain degree, depending on how much you're going to play. This is so different. This is just so different. And this is why I was kind of had my fingers crossed that people would make a good decision. But I just ultimately know that people are people. This is not just you could lose your job. This is not just you could play poorly. This is not just we could lose a game. This is you could get the damn league shut down.
Right.
You know, it's just the right. Level of selfishness involved in that is crazy.
You know, my grandfather used to say, and he put it the best way, you can't be up all night checking temperatures. And he left it at that. But this is a different deal. I mean, like you said, what the Rams are doing, what these teams are doing to keep the players safe, keep them healthy, try to keep the virus at bay so you can play football. This is it's an almost impossible undertaking. And for one person to be so selfish that you give in to your needs or whatever they are, that you try to, you know, break protocol just to satisfy yourself when you put everybody at risk, I don't think cutting him is enough. Uh-huh. I wish you could do more. I really do. Maybe you should bring back the old school stock, put his head in the stock, you know,
right out in front of the camp, right?
Yeah,
right out in front of the facility
and line up a jugs machine and turn it all the way up and just start firing footballs at him. And then you cut him. That's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, you put everybody at risk. I mean, there's no way I could do a press conference and be calm if I was Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I would be irate. Look, you used a word that I think is exactly right, that a player's needs. I get it. You need it. You need to get somebody in there. I hear what you're saying, but here's the problem, bro. That's not the way to do it.
Right.
Do you really – what's his name again? Kima Silverlin. Do you really think you're the first guy in the history of the world to say, you know what I'll do? I'll give her a team polo. They'll never know.
Wow.
I mean, what are you doing?
I don't know. Look, his name is Joe Bag of Donuts. His name is Ed Empty Chair from here on out. On your Wikipedia page, it should not say rookie. It should say dummy. And just leave it at that. And no one should give the guy a shot. That's just terrible. And that's, you know, we made fun of Lou Williams for going out and getting the chicken wings. And you would think, okay, there was a story where a guy, you know, went out and he had to go into quarantine, and it was an issue for his team. So that's already been there. You're not the first. There's already been some examples of what not to do, and here you are. It's just, come on, man. That's just beyond stupid, if you ask me.
Yeah, real dumb. And unfortunately, I don't think that he will be the last guy to try something like that. I mean, We'll see. The Lakers, they played their final game of the bubble. They lose to the Kings, whatever. Like Michael Thompson said, it doesn't really matter. LeBron played a little bit in the first half, played about 17 minutes. Fine, perfect. Here we go. Now we're about to get started. We're not quite sure who the Lakers are going to play. It'll be Memphis or it'll be Portland, probably Portland. Memphis would have to beat Portland twice this weekend for it to be the Grizz. But watching LeBron last night and just keep reminding myself over and over again, DeMarco, is that once these playoffs start, LeBron's going to play probably 41, 42 minutes a game. Anthony Davis is probably going to play the same. That the needs to go deeper into your bench, the needs to ask more from other players go down. I'm feeling better about this today, even after I saw Damian Lillard do what he does again last night to Brooklyn.
Which is why I'm rooting hard for Memphis. I really am. I want this to, you know, I want this series to be extended because of what you said about LeBron. When it's playoff time, you know LeBron is going to be out there a lot, and he's going to be out there a long time, and he's going to be asked to carry a heavy load. So is Anthony Davis. So, you know, the more you can tire out Dame Lillard, if that's what's going to happen, because I think we're in agreement here. It's going to be Portland. I just don't know how many games it's going to take for them to get to the Lakers. But Memphis, put your best foot forward, throw everything you got at the guy, and maybe it'll take two games to get over the hump. And then, you know, it'll be easier for the Lakers to take care of business within five games. A sweep, great. Five games would be awesome. Get more rest moving into the second round. But, you know, I think, you know, you're playing with house money. You went, 3-5 in the bubble? But I think you did exactly everything you needed to do, and you saw everyone you needed to see moving into the postseason. And the best thing for Frank Vogel is you didn't show any of your cards.
Yeah.
You didn't give anything away for any other playoff team that you may face in round one or round two.
Are there cards? And I'm genuinely asking because I don't know if there's anything particularly sneaky about what they're getting ready to do. I mean, it's just LeBron and AD and Kuzma and here we come and either beat us or don't. I don't think that we're going to see, ooh, there it is. We hadn't seen that. It feels like we're going to see what we saw prior to the pandemic just without Avery Bradley. And Avery Bradley's a nice player, but I don't think he was the difference between them winning it or not. It's just going to be a whole bunch of LeBron and AD, and that should be good enough.
Well, certain plays like they ran with Kuzma, that three-point shot where he beat the Nuggets. I mean, stuff like that, or defensively, their rotations, how they're going to handle certain guys. When are they going to insert Kuzma into the game, or are they going to start him? The chances of him starting are remote, but when do they bring him off the bench, and, you know, who's going to guard who? So all that stuff, I don't think anyone has an idea of what the Lakers are going to do or what they're going to look like come playoff time. And I think that was the perfect way to handle the bubble for the Lakers, the perfect way for any one seed to handle the bubble. I think Frank Vogel and LeBron James it was great the way they handled their house money, so to speak. They're ready for the postseason. They're rested and ready. And whoever gets them in the first round is going to be taxed before they even take the floor against the Lakers.
How many of those eight games that they played do you think that they went onto the court trying to win them? They're trying to win. They're not going out there trying to lose. But, hey, we're going to throw our best punch in this game. Of those eight, it felt like maybe twice they tried that.
Well, you're always trying to win. And this is something else about Portland. And no matter how you feel about Dame Lillard, I mean, look at the points against. And that was against some teams that weren't playing anyone. They were giving up buckets by the thousands. And that's why Dame Lillard had to score 60, 42, 51 points, because they can't stop anybody. But from a Lakers perspective, I bet they went in. Every team that takes the floor wants to win. But I think it was more important how they play, the effort, and doing the things they practice. I think they were looking at – they put more emphasis on that stuff than they did the actual Ws. Yeah. Losing a game there, it's not the end of the world, but – just making sure you follow through with the game plan, I think that was more important than the win or the loss.
Yeah, Portland yesterday gave up 133 points to a Brooklyn team that won 35 games this year. Brooklyn's
right.
Not a great team. You know, they're another team. You know, we talked about Golden State. We talked about Phoenix. Brooklyn's another team. Next year when Kevin Durant's back in the league, you can put them right near the top all over again. Kevin Durant's that good. Kyrie Irving is a wacko. But he's he's a pretty talented wacko, right? Like he's a guy that can cause you some problems at any given point. That's another team. And look, the Lakers are the favorites going in there. I don't know if they're heavy favorites the way that it might have felt a few months ago. But they're still, it still runs through them. I Damian Lillard is a scary dude, but I think you're right. This feels like five, maybe six games. I think Lillard will win a game by himself. That pushes it to five. Beyond that, they need to make sure they don't go into seven, because that brings in all sorts of randomness that you don't want to deal with. But I feel a lot better about where they are after the last couple of games than I did after the first handful.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Portland took game one, you know, in a nail-biter. And like you said, Dame shows up and hits a game-winning shot to, you know, to win it for Portland. And then from then on, it becomes a sweep and you win it in five. That would not surprise me at all. Just one question about Kyrie. Do you think he's really, like, crazy or crazy like a fox?
No,
like, I'm doing this because it works for – I'm doing this weird stuff because it works for me and it gets me attention. Or is this really him?
I think it's really him. I'll put it to you this way. Every time Kyrie Irving has left the team, people are happy to see him go. You know what I mean? Like, and we're talking about one of the more talented guys in the league, that when Cleveland traded him for a guy with one leg. I mean, they traded him for Isaiah Thomas, knowing that he probably was not going to be, you know, the replacement there. The Celtics were better without him. The Celtics players, by all accounts, really disliked him. That he was not he was in Brooklyn about 5 minutes before people started looking at him sideways, like, really, this is all true about him? I do not think that this is a method to his madness. I just think it's madness.
See, I was thought it's a guy that clearly doesn't get it. Like when he was playing with LeBron. I mean, did you really think you were going to get more credit than LeBron James for winning the championship?
Dude, before LeBron got there, Kyrie, you had played them right into the number one pick all over again. Then when old number 23 showed up, you guys were in the finals 4 years in a row. Stop.
Come on, man. I mean, this is planet Earth, not flat Earth, whatever you think it is. But yeah, he's supremely talented. But yeah, man, I think the Lakers are in good position to beat whoever they face in the first round. But not only that, they've got enough rest. They've had enough time to work on stuff to where they can make a deep run in the postseason, period.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. They're going to need one more guy. AD got him covered. LeBron. Is it Kuz? Is Kuz the guy? Is Kuz the guy? Because, look, Kuzma has been, like, pathologically competitive through this whole thing from the moment he showed up with the swag and all these things. But this is new for him. He has never played in an NBA playoff game. If I had to bet on somebody who is going to be kind of comfortable with that spotlight, I think Kuz is a pretty good pick. But until you're in that fire, you don't know what that's going to feel like.
You know, I think he's ready. I think that last shot meant a lot when he beat the Nuggets. It was big for him. I think they were challenging him. You know, like you said, I mean, in a playoff scenario, even in a non-playoff scenario, we were all kind of surprised that didn't go through LeBron. But I think deferring to him, you know, we're going to go through Kuz, and he's going to hit the shot and we're going to win. And then he does it. It shows that the team has confidence in him. And when he hits the shot, his confidence will grow. So that's part of the thing, playing with house money. I think part of it was making sure his confidence level is sky high moving into the first round. So I think he's going to ride that wave of, you know, these guys like me. They have confidence in what I do, and LeBron has confidence in me. So having him feel the way he does moving into the first round, I think that was paramount going into the bubble. And I think going away, you give them an A just based on that alone.
And you're going to get Rondo back too before too long. Yeah. That's a dude that's got all the stripes. That guy's been
through this
a million times, and he's going to be incredibly important too. Lakers last night, sponsored by Wingstop, freshly made just for you wings, sauced and tossed in 11 mouthwatering flavors. Get yours delivered to your door at wingstop.com. Wingstop, where flavor gets its wings. DeMarco was at Rams camp yesterday. He said, one guy looks great. We'll tell you who that was next. Coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. You know, you've made me feel better, DeMarco, about a bunch of things. You've got me feeling better about the Lakers. The Dodgers I always felt pretty good about, but it was nice to see them have six home runs last night. But your trip to Rams camp yesterday fills me with optimism, because what you said that you saw yesterday sounds like everybody's taking this pretty seriously. Everybody's making sure that they're doing everything possible to get us ready for a season on time. And you also said it felt kind of like football camp. I mean, different to be sure, but when it comes to playing football, pretty familiar.
Yeah, the only thing different about what I saw yesterday was, you know, you couldn't actually walk around the field, you know, just by yourself, and you had to maintain distance with the players. And, you know, when I did speak to Aaron Donald, like I do every camp, just to say what's up, I had to do it from, like, you know, 10 yards away. And, you know, you can't really give hugs, high fives. So that was the only difference. But everything else was football. You know, you're out there, there are guys breaking the huddle, there are guys going through drills, and, you know, they're working as if this is going to be a football season. So you wouldn't notice a difference outside of people walking around with masks and the social distancing. But, you know, a few things did stand out, man. I mean, you know, I told Aaron, I made fun of him. I said, it's nice to see you with clothes on, because every other Instagram post is, you know, with his shirt off. And he said, stop hating. I said, of course I'm hating. I wish I can look like that. But he looks like he is ready for prime time. And Josh Reynolds is a guy. He's wearing a new number. He's wearing number 11. That's okay. The thing that threw me off, because I'm looking for number 83. That sure. was his number last year. And I'm like, who is this number 11 guy? You know, how'd they slip him in? Who is this dude? He looks like a pro. Did they sign a free agent? That's Josh Reynolds. Mm. No way. He looks bigger. He looks stronger. He looks like he's lost body fat. So, you know, when Jared Goff puts it out there, he wants to have 3 1,000-yard receivers. I'm like, okay, well, this might be the third guy he's talking about. So I like this Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and a big, tall tree of a receiver like a Josh Reynolds out there, a bigger, stronger, faster guy. So I think this is a guy that Sean McVay can have a lot of fun with offensively this year.
I think, look, the Rams had a lot of turnover this offseason. Corey Littleton is gone. Dante Fowler is gone. We know that Todd Gurley is gone. Some veteran guys that weren't there a ton but did play a lot last year. Clay Matthews, Eric Weddle are gone. Tlaib is gone. Peters is gone. That a whole bunch of guys that were important parts of what they've done the last few seasons are down the road. And there will be difficult to replace to varying degrees. I think the one guy, and I liked this guy I'm about to say. I thought he was a really good player. I thought he was very, very exciting. But I think that they got out of this business at exactly the right time was Brandon Cooks. That feels to me like the guy that is going to be the easiest to replace. Number one, because I've never wanted to be wrong about something more in my life, just the history of concussions that this guy has. Every time Brandon Cooks got tackled, DeMarco, I'm like, okay, that's it. He's done for the year.
Because yeah, just, I'm with
it,
you.
He's small. You know, by NFL standards, he's tiny. He's fast as you know what, but he's small. I do not know how big of a loss the Brandon Cooks loss is. Do you think that they're going to be able to replace him fairly easily?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. And with the guy I just mentioned and the offense and with the reemergence of the tight end spot with Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett, I think you can cover up that third receiver. And sometimes I think – that was needed last year. You could have gone to that a little bit earlier against what they were doing to you to take advantage of that 6-1 defense that Bill Belichick threw at you at the Super Bowl and everyone seemed to use against you. It screamed for more 2 tight end sets and less 3 receiver sets, but I think that's just where you were. And with Brandon Cooks, he's such a good guy that when Jared Goff would, you know, lace one in there and he would take a pop, I would get mad at Jared for throwing him the football.
Yeah.
And that's not where you want to be.
No.
You know, when you're trying to win games, you don't want to worry about someone's safety. You want to worry about guys making plays. But, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of things that stood out. That's number one. Defensively speaking, there were some guys out there that, you know, you're down Tlaib and you're without Marcus Peters, but you gained a Jalen Ramsey. And it's just ridiculous the way he looks. It's ridiculous the way he covers. When he's on a professional receiver, he's a blanket. And it's funny when you have – one of the equipment guys just given a look, he's covering that guy like he's Julio Jones. Like it doesn't matter who's on top of him or in front of him. It's just a lockdown guy. I mean, I love his mentality and it filters, it spreads. And the fact that John Johnson III is back at one of the safety spots, you couple that with Taylor Rapp. You thought you would see sprinkles of that last year. It turned out Rapp had to play more because JJ was down, but now that they're back in the secondary together with Jalen Ramsey, you're like, wow, man, that's a lot of athleticism back there. You could throw a lot of things at a lot of different teams and really trip them up.
Yeah, they're going to be interesting to me because I want to go back to what you said a second ago. The 6-1 that the Patriots threw at them in the Super Bowl and the Rams, just they never got on track. The Rams had been just – tearing through the league for a couple of years offensively. And look, Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick for a reason. He had an answer to that, and it worked, and the Patriots win the Super Bowl, the Rams come back the next year, and the offense does not look the same. Did he crack the code, and do you need to come up with a new code for what you're going to do offensively with the Rams? Because since that game, now they've had good games, but they have not looked like they looked prior to that since on a regular basis.
Well, it's funny. It's like we're going to go, and it's like two gladiators, and they walk out. They have shields, swords, daggers, and everything. They have a wide array of weapons, and Belichick comes out with something, and you have to counter. And, oh, you don't have that? Well, I'm going to keep playing this until you show me you can beat it, or you show me you have a different personnel group that can, you know, counter what I'm doing. So and that speaks to what Gerald Everett, you called it the disappearing act. Well, if he had emerged last season, that 6-1 is not so much of a problem because it puts more pressure on the defense because there are two tight ends. You don't know which way to call strength, and it just kind of balances out the defense and puts the onus on them to try to figure out which way to declare strength. So this year, I think it's going to be a little bit different. This is why he didn't give up on Gerald Everett. This is why they invested more time into him, because Tyler Higbee started to show up, became a big weapon. Now you need the other guy, the other tight end, to be equally as dangerous, or at least make him honor it. So when they do start trotting out that 6-1, trying to stop the run, throwing everything they got to stop Todd Gurley last season or stop your running game this year, you can make them pay on the backside with that one-on-one. That's what happens with Kansas City with Kelce. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in San Francisco with Kittle. At some point, they balance you out defensively. They make you declare, and then they take advantage of you backside with that one-on-one with the tight end or a fullback. So that's what the Rams didn't do. They were just trying to jam that square peg into a round hole with three receiver sets versus that 6-1. And you couldn't run the football. It put more pressure on Jared Goff, and it became kind of forced. So this year, they've really put some emphasis on those two tight end sets. So hopefully Gerald Everett had a good offseason, and you can count on Tyler Higbee to continue doing what he did to finish off last season.
Well, look, and this isn't an excuse. This is just the reality of it all, that this is the first time that Sean McVay has to counterpunch a little bit, right? That when he showed up and what he brought to the Rams, it worked right away. And then it worked again the next season even better. And so there really isn't I don't care what you're doing. If something's working, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep – if you can't hit a curveball, I'm going to keep throwing you curveballs, DeMarco. I'm not going to say, okay, here comes a fastball. Now, if all of a sudden you start hitting it, now I need to figure out what I'm going to do next. And I think that's where Sean McVay is. Because he had so much success so early, because he is – I said it yesterday – I really do think he's a special guy in this league. They don't come around very often where you have a guy that's just got it kind of figured out, whether it's schematically, whether it's a management style, whether it's the charisma that comes along with it, and he's got all of these things. But this is the first time he's had to kind of find a second pitch to mix metaphors. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to figure it out. He's really good at this.
It could have worked last season, Travis. It did the year before. I mean, there were some 6-1. Belichick didn't just pull it out of nowhere. I mean, teams tried it, but the difference was you had a fully healthy, fully engaged Todd Gurley. So he was special. He would make guys miss. He would run through tackles. So he would make you pay personally. So it's Sean McVay going to his bag of tricks or having to adjust. That's one thing, and that is true. But if he had a fully engaged Todd Gurley, I mean, we wouldn't be talking like this. You wouldn't be sitting at 9 wins. You would probably have made the postseason. I wouldn't say you would have made a deep run. You still had offensive line problems. But, you know, 223 carries out of Todd Gurley was not enough.
No.
You needed more. 887 yards rushing. You needed more. Now, the 12 touchdowns, I love. But I was sick of seeing them throw the ball to Todd Gurley. You need more of him carrying the football, punishing the defense, punishing that 6-1 and making them get out of it. But sometimes there's no way to coach your way out of it. You're just going to have to do what you do and hope for the best.
All right, let's talk about one of the guys that it's going to be on. With Todd Gurley gone and with all the other things that have happened, there is one guy that's got to step up more than anybody else this season. We'll do that next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. No Todd Gurley, coming off of a season where you missed the playoffs for the first time in a couple of years. The San Francisco 49ers are the defending NFC champs. Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll didn't go anywhere. The other team in your division just added arguably the best wide receiver in football in DeAndre Hopkins, and they have a dynamic young quarterback. You've got your hands full this year if you're the Rams. You're playing in the toughest division in football, and here's the rub, DeMarco. Jared Goff is coming off of a season where he regressed. You go back a couple of years ago to their Super Bowl appearance, and Jared Goff had 32 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. I mean, that's just really excellent. That's nearly a 3-to-1 ratio, and he was doing a ton of work and looked like he was on his way. Fast forward to last season, 22 touchdowns, a 10-touchdown drop-off, and his interceptions actually went up. He had 16 picks. We can talk about all these different pieces, and we know how important the offensive line is, and who's going to replace Todd Gurley, and who's going to replace Brandon Cooks, and who's the other guy to go get the quarterback other than Aaron Donald. Fact of the matter is, if Jared Goff isn't playing at the level he was at a couple of years ago, or arguably even better, does any of the rest of this stuff even matter?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, and I'll take the picks, with the exception of a few. The one he threw to Lavonte David, I mean, that's inexcusable. Remember that one? He threw it right to him.
Yeah,
that was ugly. Can't have that. But, I mean, that's few and far between. When he makes a mistake with the football, it's, you know, once every few games. And there are some quarterbacks that do it once every other drive. They're Jameis. Just not caught. So, yeah, I mean, Jameis, a lot of quarterbacks, they just make mistakes with the football a ton. He just doesn't do that. He's really smart. So, the picks I can live with. I remember Tom Brady had – they were 14-2, and I think Tom Brady threw, like, 14 picks and 23 touchdowns. So I can live with that. What I can't live with is the 5 fumbles lost by Jared Goff. That is inexcusable. If you want to see, I don't want to say that you're getting a phony Sean McVay, but if you want to see the real Sean McVay when he's behind the scenes, watch him when he's watching Jared lose the football in traffic. Because they work on it so much, and that's stuff that's solely on the quarterback. I mean, that is a team killer. That is a momentum killer. I mean, it just takes all the life out of you and gives it to them. So you've got to fight to get the momentum back after your quarterback loses the football. So that's on Jared. Jared's got to get better, but he acknowledges that. But so, I mean, with an offensive line that was reshuffled a few times, there was a lack of continuity. I mean, I think Jared Goff played a scrappy, you know, season. To get 9 wins out of that, I mean, to really keep your team in contention and make some things happen. Could he have been better? Absolutely. Could he have been a lot worse with what was in front of him in certain situations? Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, but running the football is going to be an adventure. But I'll take the same numbers. If, let's say, Malcolm Brown this year as the lead back or the guy that starts the game, if he comes in at 223 carries and knocks on the door of 1,000 yards, I'll be surprised. And I'll be completely happy with that. Now, slide those numbers up to Darrell Henderson. He gets more opportunities. If he can chip in like Malcolm Brown, and I think there'll be some more home run hit runs with him because he's just got that kind of speed. And then Cam Akers, if he can chip in like Darrell Henderson did last year, I think you can make up for the loss of a superstar like Todd Gurley. But just be available, be consistent, stay with the plan, and don't hamstring the team with, you know, you've worked Monday – from Monday to Sunday on a certain game plan, and then in the game, you yank yourself out or you're just not available. And don't make it tough on game day. So everyone stays active and stays with the plan that you work on. I think you'll be better running the football via committee than you were with Todd Gurley last season.
You know, you mentioned the fumbles too, and those are just killers because you can almost I like you're talking about watch Sean McVay. I would imagine if you had a camera on my face in those moments too, because you – again, where you're down on the field, you're down on the sidelines. I'm sitting in the press box watching this, so, you know, you're getting that elevated view. You can feel it closing. You can see it closing. And, like, that ball needs to get out. That ball needs to get out. That ball needs to get out. And then, sure as you know what, pop, somebody hits him on the arm or the wrist, and the ball comes out. And that clock in his head is, I think, one of those things that needs to be better. That, to your point, if he's trying to fit some footballs in some places every once in a while and it gets picked off, okay, that's just the NFL. It's going to happen. But if that clock is hitting zero and it's still in your hands and there's a bunch of bodies flying around you, that ball's got to come out. It's got to be in the third row. And I don't know if we've seen enough of him on an improvement of that. There are times when he does it perfectly, but there are way too many times where it's, dude, there's nothing there. The ball's got to be – you got to get rid of it. And it seemed that – a fumble per game was almost there. He didn't lose them all, but he lost enough of them that it was just – it was a real issue, ball security for him. That's got to be at the top of the list.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like any sort of, you know, ancient Roman battle or whatever. You know, we've nicked the king. The king is bleeding. That's going to affect your side. It's going to affect morale. Anytime you get the ball out, when you knock the ball out of the quarterback's hands, that's going to fire you up, and it's going to create some indecision on the other side, either through that quarterback or the guys up front. He's going to lose some confidence in the people up front, or the coaches, the play callers, will lose confidence in that quarterback. There's just a lot when the quarterback turns it over. So and not through interceptions, through fumbles. So, yeah, he's got to be better. They've got to be smarter about what they do. And Sean McVay would say it's on him to give Jarrett the options to know what to do, to put that in his head so he'll know what to do when he's surrounded. But he's coaching it. They're working through it. But, you know, it's so important for him to take the next step. And I think this is where Russell Wilson and, you know, Aaron Rodgers and the special quarterbacks, to where they take it up a notch, to where you actually believe your quarterback can do anything. Not just lace throws in or, you know, beat the defense or do things. Just he's not going to mess it up for us.
Yeah.
You know, I just remember going into games where you just knew that our starter, the guy we had on the field at some point, was going to mess it up. Mm-hmm. You know, even when he didn't or played a good game, he was going to mess it up at some point. So, but when you have the opposite, when you feel like this guy is just going to be locked in and never make a mistake, always keep us in contention, you have a tendency to play your guts out for a guy like that. And then eventually it's going to happen.
Not screwing it up is a skill, and I'm not even being flipped. Just keep the trains running on time. It absolutely is a skill that you have to have as a quarterback. Some guy named Keyshawn Johnson is going to join us. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, so he's got a new show that is starting on Monday, none other than Keyshawn Johnson. What's up, Key? How you been?
What up, man? How you guys doing? What's happening?
You
I
tell me.
I just finished rehearsal. My eyeball is going to pop out of my head. But
in a good way, I hope. I hope that the eyeballs are bugging in a good way.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's you're just learning a lot of new things, you know, because it's obviously, as you mentioned, a new show. But it's just not a new radio show. It's also a television show on ESPN2. So it's kind of – you're learning – I already obviously know the radio component. I already know the TV component, but I don't know the radio TV combination component. And so you got producers from television simultaneously with producers and directors from television and radio in your ear at the same time.
Ooh.
You know, TV trying to tell you one thing, radio trying to tell you another. You know, that's why we got all these rehearsals every single day.
When you do your top 10 that you typically like to have 11 teams in there, do they know that yet?
We haven't gotten there yet, but we will. Wow. We will be getting there.
All right. Go ahead, DeMarco. No, you go.
I was out at LA Rams, you know, training camp the other day, and it opened. And, you know, part of me is happy that they're on the field, and part of me is completely shocked. I didn't think we would be here. How about you with football and – how much confidence do you have that, you know, the league is going to start definitely, but how much confidence do you have that the league is actually going to finish? We're going to get all the way through to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it certainly, I always had the confidence, and I told Travis from day one that it was going, pro sports was going to be played. Collegiate football is a little bit different because you're dealing with amateurism. You're dealing with non-paid athletes where in the pros, they getting paid. There's a lot of money on the line. The players are getting paid. They got their own, you know, they can sign their own waivers. They don't need parents to do all of that sort of stuff. So college is a little bit different. But I always felt like it's going to get there. They're going to get there and they're going to finish, because one of the things that they're doing is they're testing frequently. They're just doing all the right things, learning from some of the other leagues' mistakes.
Were you surprised that they pulled the plug in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, or did you expect that?
I don't necessarily consider it pulling the plug. They're not going to be able to play in the SEC, the ACC, or the Big 12, Travis. What other? There's a couple other conferences that just pulled the plug, too.
The WAC has pulled the plug. The MAC has pulled. Basically, everybody but the Big 12, ACC, and SEC has said we're out.
And think about it. Think about it for a minute as you follow everything that's going on in the world. Most of the conferences or teams that are still talking about they want to play, they're in the South. Mm-hmm. Think about what the South in the pandemic, or how they're acting toward the pandemic in the South. They act like it don't even exist. They like South Orange County, man. They just walking around,
no mask,
no nothing. and so the mentality is such like we don't give a damn. But they're not going to be able to play. It's great to hold out hope. It's great to continue to push it and act that way. Just think about the commissioners, the presidents of these universities, the athletic directors. If anything were to happen to anybody from a liability standpoint, can you imagine? Let's not assume it's a player. Let's just assume it's a trainer or assistant coach. If something catastrophic happens because of the pandemic, and that's on their watch, they don't want that.
No doubt. Key, I told Travis this earlier. If these Pac-12 coaches and Big Ten coaches are not busy, if I'm a pro team, I would not hesitate to invite them over. I don't think there's a rule against that. Come on over and let's talk football. If you're not busy, then come watch my practice and tell me what you think. Would you do that?
No, it might be a little too late for that now, because NFL people are in the midst of putting the season together. If it was the off season, that's something different. But during the season, you don't need anyone clouding your mind and making adjustments. It's almost like having too much time on your hand, like Sean McVay did against the New England Patriots for the Super Bowl, where he had 2 weeks to prepare and somewhat over-prepared, messing around, overthinking things. And when you get – think about it. If you get somebody telling you what to do or do something different when you already had your mind up, made up about a certain play, now all of a sudden they come in here and try to make it better and screw it up, and it's like, nah, never mind. I'll deal with that in the offseason.
What about the opposite? If I have no idea how to make, let's say, a Mitch Trubisky a good quarterback, I would be open to anyone that has any ideas.
Yeah, but then again, it's the same thing, though. You're inviting somebody in to convolute something that you just got to figure out on your own, because now you're messing with something. They come in and they tell you the reason Mitch Trubisky is doing the things he's doing because he's throwing the ball this way. Now you start trying to correct his balance and his footing and all. Now you into your seventh game of the year and you done messed around and completely just ruined this dude's mechanics.
Key, take me through the decision process. Let's say that, you know, you are you, and this is the season that you're going to be a high draft pick, but the season gets canceled. Maybe we'll try to do it in the spring. Like, if you're Penei Sewell up at Oregon, he's going to be a top two or three pick. Do you play in the spring, or you just say, you know what, I'm done now?
Yeah, I'm out of here. See you later.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there ain't nothing to even talk about. I'm done. I already hired my agent. We found me an apartment, and we getting ready to start working out. That's real talk. What am I playing for Oregon for?
Right.
Why am I? I'm getting ready to be one of the top four linemen off the board. So why would I? For who? For what?
Right. Ricky Waters. Every time we talk NFL wide receivers, we get stuck on one guy with you. but. Could this be the end? Follow me on this, Key. Could this be the end of Bill O'Brien? Because, in effect, you've replaced DeAndre Hopkins with Brandon Cooks. And we don't know how long that's going to go with Brandon. One more tap, and he could be done forever. And if DeAndre Hopkins goes down to Arizona and lights it up, that can't play well with the Houston fan base. Could this be the end, finally? He made the one mistake that can finally cost him his job?
Well, it just depends, man. If Brandon Cook stays healthy, and he didn't necessarily replace him. Sometimes when you have a talent like a DeAndre Hopkins, you spend so much time trying to get him the football, opposed to spreading it around, getting the ball to multiple people, which essentially could make you a better team, opposed to trying to force feed the ball to one person. You know, it makes a quarterback better. So this could ultimately make them a better football team, opposed to having an individual
Key
that's really, really good.
So you're in New York now. You're getting ready to start your new show next week. You're getting ready to be on TV every day next week. So does that mean that you're going to bed early? You don't get to see Mookie Betts hit three home runs every night?
Wow.
I watched him. I watched enough of – you know, I didn't go to bed. To be honest with you, Travis, I probably didn't go to bed till 12:30, and I woke up at 4 to go to rehearsal. 12:30 a.m. here, 12:30 a.m. Here about 9:30 West Coast time. So I got a chance to see a little bit of Mookie at the plate 4 times, at 5 ribbies in, 3 jacks over the wall, 4 hits. I mean, that's what you're paying $300+ million for. Now, here's what I'm going to say to you, as I said during rehearsal. I don't understand, and you can talk to me till I'm blue in the face. I don't care. 7 home runs on the year, you know, slugging percentage, all of that. I don't understand why we got to always keep saying Mike Trout is the best baseball player in the land, da-da-da-da. And the reason I say that is statistics don't tell everything. Now, I like statistics plus people that lift and winning teams in part of it. Now, Mookie Betts came to an organization that was winning, obviously, already. But he's still thriving within a winning organization. He won at Boston. Well, you got Mike Trout, who obviously is a phenomenal talent, but his team can't win. And I know baseball is different than basketball, football, and one individual can't do it. But I just want to know, same thing with Bryce Harper. How come these guys that we classify as the best at what they do, their teams can't get out of their own way sometimes?
Well, all right, I'm going to try this in 30 seconds or so. The reason that it's still Mike Trout is because Mike Trout
Hey, I'm still part of the show. You don't cut me off in 30 seconds.
Uh-oh.
No, I said I'm going to go in 30 seconds. Believe me, I know how this works. What I'm saying, Mike Trout doesn't pitch. Mike Trout is not responsible for putting that roster together. Those are other people's responsibilities. Mookie has been on a team that has been put together in a better way than Mike Trout's. Mike Trout, like you said, Key, when you look at the numbers, they're really not close. And Mike Trout has no control over Albert Pujols being 600 years old. That's not his fault. He has no control over no one else being able to pitch. That's not his fault. That's the team that's been put around him. That is not his responsibility. Mookie Betts has been fortunate to be with a Red Sox team that's really good, to be with a Dodger team that's really good. Mookie's probably number two, but Trout is still different than every other guy out there.
Okay, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And I've always said to you, I'd rather have a guy that can help me win and put up the numbers than a guy who's just putting up the numbers and I can't win.
Let me put it to you this way, Key, though. Let me ask you this. Do you feel, though, that Mike Trout is preventing them from winning?
No, I don't feel that way. It's always something in the air, right? It's a guy in a locker room who got snack, crackle, pop, who makes everybody feel a certain way. When he comes in the room brightens up and people feel good that day. I feel that way about Mookie Betts. I feel like even though he's on a team that's being put together and was already winning and going to World Series and 7 straight division titles and all of those sort of things, he fits in perfect. They love the personality, all of these sort of things. I give him credit for those sort of behavioral patterns where you get other athletes that wherever they go, they just can't win despite their individual success, no matter what the roster looked like. And so it's almost like, is that going to be Mike Trout? Where we always go say, oh, he's the best, but he just can't win.
We'll see. We'll see. They're not good. I mean, I'm not here to convince you that they're a good team and that they're going to go the right way. But
then on top of that, why can't we just say Mookie Betts is probably number one and he's number two? Does it hurt that bad?
Yeah, because it's not accurate. It's not right.
Well, why? How is it not accurate, or that, how is it that far off when we just watch this dude go 4-for-4 with 3 jacks and 5 ribbies?
Two days before, Mike Trout hit two home runs, and then 2 days before that, he hit 2 home runs. So he's doing the same thing, and he's doing more on top. We can go around and around. Very quickly, I had a theory that I hit DeMarco with. I want to hit you with very real quick. Do you think that there's a possibility that the reason Cody Bellinger is having a hard time getting started this season is because Mookie is everything that you just said. He's that guy with the snap, crackle, pop. He's the guy that everybody's drawn to. He is unequivocally the star of the Dodgers at this point. He's their best player. He's their most popular player. Do you think that could be sitting a certain way with him?
I don't know Cody's personality, but it may be more so, and I need to look up the numbers and at some point, but it may be the where we're at in the season, right? Like, this is a different season, so to speak, and he won't get hot till a certain part of the season, and maybe he just hasn't gotten there in this short season yet. Maybe that's it. Maybe he needs another 30 games to really get going. I mean, I got to look at the numbers to see where he was at the last couple years at a point in the season.
He was red hot to start last year, Key. Remember, nobody could get him out last year.
But then again, maybe because of the way that they're doing things and pitching and rotating pitchers in and out of lineups and shorten, guys aren't going the full, you know, seven innings. They're only going four. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's the Mookie. I hope not. It would be the Mookie Betts effect, because then that wouldn't be good for the team morale in general. Like, you don't want to have negative adversity surrounding a team when you're trying to win a championship just because a dude is playing good. You let it affect your performance. I wouldn't think it would be that.
I hope not. I hope not. I'm looking for a reason. No, I don't. But I'm trying to come up with a reason for a guy that was the MVP last year that was just otherworldly, looks real, real bad right now. I'm just trying to come up with something.
But remember what I told you when it was the Keyshawn, LSD, and Travis show. I said, what makes us think that Cody Bellinger is going to be a long-lasting player the way he's been? And you guys, you and LZ, he's like, you're crazy. He's got it. But what if he just – maybe what if he was just a 2 to 3 year guy?
Yeah, well, you are crazy. Maybe you weren't crazy about that one. You are crazy. That's a different conversation.
But think about it. What if he's really just a 2 to 3 year guy like you've seen in
professional
sports about guys before?
No, it does happen.
It happens where all of a sudden the guy – 3 years, he's like, man, this dude's going to be woo. And then all of a sudden, he's like, damn, what happened to him?
But they usually don't get to the height that he was at. They usually don't win an MVP and be one of those what happened to him guys. You get close, but you kind of fall off, but he's kind of already gotten over the top. All right, Key, looking forward to hearing the show on Monday. Looking forward to being a part of the show on Monday.
Well, you also are a part of the show, so don't act like you're not.
No, that's what I just said. I said I'm looking forward to being a part of it. I'm looking forward to getting to talk to you. I'm looking forward to every last part of it. So,
But wait. So, I know I'm going up against the clock and you got to get out and blah, blah, blah. You probably got a guest and the whole deal. But the one thing that I don't miss about New York is the damn horns. People lay on their horns like they ain't got no damn sense for no reason at all. Man, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. I'm like at a stoplight yesterday, and the dude just laid on the horn. I'm like, dude, the light just changed. It is.
Wow.
I swear to you, Travis, it wasn't 5 seconds. This dude literally laid on the horn. It was crazy. I'm like, and you know, I wanted to go off, but the kids was with me, so I just kind of was like, whatever, man, this dude. I was just like, you going nowhere so fast. So wait, before I let you go. Then he speeds through everything. He gets to the next light. Guess where I'm at? I'm right next to him. You did all that to go where?
Wow.
He likes to be at the front of the line, man.
You was at the same light I'm at. It was the funniest thing ever. But hey, man, enjoy your weekend, and let's go. Let's go get it on Monday.
You got it. I'll see you there, my friend.
Right about, Key.
All right, Key, thanks.
All right, bet.
All right, we're going to come back. We're going to get into the Clippers a little bit coming up next hour. Om Young-Misuk will talk about that Clipper first-round matchup. That's coming up, plus Lakers in their first-round matchup. And DeMarco, you and I are going to get into that Mookie Trout conversation again. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.